Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. I am your host, Adam Klugman, and we have an absolutely amazing show for you. I mean amazing. We are very fortunate to have Congressman Alan Grayson. And I don't know if you remember who he is, but I certainly do. He is the former and soon to hopefully be again congressman from the 8th District of Florida, which is basically the Orlando area. He held that seat from 2008 to 2010, and not everybody knows this, he was the first Democrat to break a 34-year Republican winning streak in that district. In the two short years he was in Congress, Alan Grayson made a stunning number of enemies, mostly Republican, and quickly built a reputation as the maddest, mad-as-hell Democrat to come along in decades. I remember just being galvanized, like, wow, there's still somebody out there with a backbone. In 2009, he was voted the biggest pain in the ass by the Republican Party. I made that part up, but I thought it was funny. And is running for Congress in Orlando again. And we are going to do everything we can here at Mad as Hell in America to help Congressman Grayson win again. Congressman Grayson, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
Thanks. I'm going to try to be mad. It doesn't come easy to me, but I'll try.
I know it's a real challenge. Actually, I think one of your greatest gifts is really knowing how to piss people off, especially Republicans.
Well, let's face it, they deserve it.
They do deserve it. Before we get into it, I want to start. We're going to start with your story, and I want to go back in time, but let's start with the present tense of what's going on. I know you have strong feelings about this kind of false choice that we've been given between debt limits and Social Security and Medicare. President Obama last night had a mad-as-hell moment. What did you think of all that?
Well, the Republicans are trying to once again hold the entire country hostage.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
There is no reason to cut Social Security. There is no reason to cut Medicare. Those are the only two programs that the government actually operates at a profit. So why would you want to cut them?
Yeah.
How about cutting war? That would be nice. Yeah. You know, they've been bending everybody into a pretzel the last few weeks trying to say that we need to save $2 trillion. Well, if you simply ended the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya, you could save $2 trillion over the next 10 years. It's exactly what they claim they want to do. But somehow that's not on the table. What is on the table is taking away health care from old, sick people, taking away health care from sick, poor people, and making sure that our seniors have to work until the day they die. That's what's on the table.
We're talking to Alan Grayson, congressmanwithguts.com. is the website. I want you to go there, and I want you to put money in his coffer. We want him to win. We need Congressman Grayson back in Congress. And while you're at your computer, go to www.no-cuts.com. No-cuts.com. We're going to talk about that in a minute. The president had a mad-as-hell moment. It literally looked like he had steam coming from his ears. My take on it was it just seemed a little bit too late to be mad as hell.
Well, look, we gave back the tax cuts for the rich a few months ago. If not for that, that alone would save $1 trillion over the next 10 years.
Right.
We gave $150 billion in so-called incentives to corporations this year alone, multinational corporations. We gave them $150 billion tax break a few months ago. And now all of a sudden there's some kind of crisis? I don't think so.
I
think this has been brewing for a long time. And it's been brewing because the other side fights for their patrons being huge multinational corporations and the filthy rich, and our side wants to compromise. That's the fundamental problem we're in. It's
yes.
A choice, I said last week, between the meanies and the weenies. There's got to be a third choice.
I like that. The meanies are the Republicans. The weenies are the Democrats who seem incapable of standing up. And one of the frustrating things with President Obama, it seems to me, that he keeps making concessions and compromises, thinking he's going to make friends, but he's not. And he's not making any friends, and he's not gaining any respect from the Republicans, and it's doing him no good. And now he got angry at long last, but it ended up feeling kind of ineffectual.
Well, he's experiencing the frustration that all the rest of us feel all the time when they contemplate the fact that we might be giving away our own health care when we become old and we need it. We might be giving our own health care when we lose our jobs, when we get divorced, when we run into some kind of problem, we can have trouble paying the bills, and Medicaid steps in to help us. And we may be giving away all the money that we have paid into the Social Security system our entire working lives for the sake of cuts. For no real purpose.
Right. And people have paid into this. I mean, that's the thing. It's like an insurance policy. It's not like it's coming off the top of anything, that people have paid into this. It's just the whole thing is like this false imperative and this false choice. I sometimes hesitate to talk too much about it because I feel like I lend it credence when I actually get involved with the conversation to start weighing the two sides. Both seem false to me.
That's right. What we should be concentrating on is doing something to help the 23 million Americans who can't find full-time work right now.
There you go.
We should be concentrating on helping the 50 million Americans who cannot see a doctor when they're sick.
Oh.
And we should be concentrating on helping the 15 million American families who owe more on their mortgage than the value of their house. They're underwater, as the saying goes, and they feel like they're drowning. Those are the people who we should be concentrating on helping. Those are the problems that we should be concentrating on solving. Not worrying, no, really obsessing about what the federal budget deficit might be in the year 2021, and how do we cheat old people?
Yeah, well, let's take it from them, by all means. We're talking to Alan Grayson, who is running again in the 8th District of Florida, which is basically Orlando. And for a congressman with guts.com is the website. Also go to no-cuts.com. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But for those of you who don't know who Congressman Grayson is, I want to take a step back, Congressman. I always like to start at the beginning of a story. So I want to go back to 2008 when the health care debate was just starting to rage. And I know you've probably heard this clip 1,000 times, but you came onto the House floor with these kind of foam core boards and laid out your version of the Republican health care plan. I have the clip. Let's play it.
And it's my duty and pride tonight to be able to announce exactly what the Republicans plan to do for health care in America. It's this. Don't get sick. That's right. Don't get sick. If you have insurance, don't get sick. If you don't have insurance, don't get sick. If you're sick, don't get sick. Just don't get sick. But I think that the Republicans understand that that plan isn't always going to work. It's not a foolproof plan. So the Republicans have a backup plan in case you do get sick. If you get sick in America, this is what the Republicans want you to do. Die quickly.
Well, that cause, I love it. I never get tired of hearing it. You had only been in Congress how long at that point?
8 months.
So, and you kind of came out of nowhere, and that stand really put you on the map. And it made you hated by Republicans, but very interesting, kind of beloved by the people and people like me who saw it and said, wow, somebody's actually standing up.
Well, it's a 5-minute speech, and if you listen to the whole thing, which is available at our Rep. Alan Grayson YouTube channel, along with a lot of other clips, you'll see what the context was. The president had come and given a speech. He pointed out that the Democrats had a health care plan. The Republicans seemingly didn't. The Republicans waved around during the president's speech their plan. And I went across the aisle when the speech was over and saw it was a blank piece of paper.
I just can't believe it.
They were waving blank pieces of paper at the president during the speech.
Oh.
And I realized at that point that the fundamental truth was that they have no plan.
Oh.
And it's been 2 years. You know, they've had plenty of opportunities to come up with a plan. It's not like this all just jumped out at everybody. And the fact remains that they literally have no plan. You know, you talk to people about this on the other side, they say, well, what about tort reform? And I say, exactly how many people who don't have health coverage now are going to get health coverage because of tort reform? We've had tort reform here in Florida now for, I don't know, 14 years or so. And I can't think of a single person who's gotten health coverage because of tort reform. The fact is they just don't care. And I thought that somebody should point that out. Somebody should point out that our plan is to actually heal the sick, you know, follow that 3,000-year-old imperative to feed the hungry, to shelter the homeless, to heal the sick. And their plan is, I don't know what.
I
really don't know what, and I still don't know what. Their plan for unemployment. What is the Republican plan for unemployment? Get a job?
Yeah.
What is the Republican plan for homelessness? Moving with your relatives? They have nothing. You know, one of the most dramatic things that came to me while I was in Congress, and I went with an open mind. I mean, you know, I went through the first 50 years of my life never being elected to anything.
Right.
So I went into it with an open mind. what I realized very quickly is that we actually want to help people, and they really don't.
I know. It's just stunning. And I don't, it seems so obvious to us. And yet, in this last election, we seem to have this kind of very bipolar system in which we're swinging one way and swinging back the next. That's my 1 minute music. Can you stay for the next segment?
Sure.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Thank God for it, and thank God that we have it. I hope you're enjoying this amazing day in Portland, Oregon. We are talking to former Congressman and soon to be again Congressman Alan Grayson. Congressman with guts.com is the website. I want you to go there, and I want you to give him money right now while you're thinking of it. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. You know, I know we have a lot to talk about, but if I could just take a minute.
Please.
I'd like to say how much I love Portland.
I heard that.
My wife and I went there a few years ago, and I have to say that one of my favorite commercial institutions in the entire world is Powell's Bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
My wife is very fond of old dictionaries. That's just her little hobby.
Right.
And there's a whole shelf or two shelves of old dictionaries in Powell's Bookstore, and she was in heaven. I think she bought one from 1925 and another one from 1941. It's the kind of thing that you could only find there. And there is some pleasure, I think, involved in just walking around, just enjoying what you find in the stacks, all these hidden gems. You can't do that on Amazon.com.
No, you can't. And one of the great things about Powell's, I think, is just the smell of books, and particularly
yeah.
old books. You know, it's yeah. such a visceral, non-linear kind of experience, non-digital experience, rather. Okay, so we're talking to Alan Grayson, and we're kind of getting the story. So you take a stand. You take a bold stand on the floor of the House and kind of pull the covers on the Republican Party and the fact that they have no plan for health care and that they are literally, not figuratively, literally waving around blank pieces of paper. It makes me think of McCarthy. We have the names. We have a plan. They don't have a plan. So then 2 years go by, and it kind of puts you on the map, and you become the mad as hell Democrat, I think. One of the things that I thought was remarkable when you took that stand was what happened on the left. I mean, predictable that the people on the right, particularly the House Republicans, would hate you. That was great, and you didn't care, and that was even better. But people on the left, they started to – there was this outpouring of enthusiasm as if finally there's a Democrat who gets it. What did you get that really resonated with the people that people are frustrated with the Democratic Party now about?
I think people are frustrated because of what I said before, that it seems like the choice comes down to the meanies and the weenies. I said a similar thing last year. The choice seemed to come down last year to between the crazies and the lazies. People felt like the Democratic Party wasn't getting enough done for them. And they have a right to expect that we get things done for them. I mean, the party exists to do good things for our people. And I feel that many people feel that the party hasn't delivered. We had 59 and then briefly 60 members of the Senate who were Democrats. We had a majority of 40 in the House of Representatives. We had 40 more Democrats than you needed to form a majority. Again, briefly, but the other times we had 39, 38, 37,
right. I mean,
really substantial majorities. And people didn't see the Democrats delivering for them the way that the Republicans always do for the filthy rich and multinational corporations, time and time again. They want regulations thrown out. The Republicans will throw out those regulations. They want a tax break. The Republicans give them a tax break. If they want a pony, the Republicans will try to get them a pony. You know, whatever they want, that's what they get. These CEOs and the others who basically, you know, operate the Republican Party.
So let's go to your reelection. So 2 years later, you have to run again. In 2008, you won by 52%. Well, it was 52-48. In 2010, it was almost like an 18-point spread. What happened there? What accounts for that 18 points?
Well, that was essentially what happened, and that was true, obviously, not just in my district, but right. It was true all around the country. In my district and throughout the state of Florida, the Republican turnout was in the high 60s, just barely below what the turnout was in 2008. The Democratic turnout was in the mid-40s. So
yeah.
When Democrats don't vote, Democrats can't win. If I had won every single Democratic vote and every single independent vote in 2010, I would have lost anyway. If you add all 25 Florida districts together, the Democrats won collectively by 6 in 2008, and we lost collectively by 18. Our Senate candidate, Kendrick Meek, got an absolutely incredible 20% of the vote. And he was at the top of the ballot. That was the first line you saw if you actually did bother to show up and vote that day. Further down on the ballot, our local Democratic mayoral candidate got 34% of the vote. Now, bear in mind that I live in a county with 100,000 more Democrats than Republicans, and the gerrymandering obviously swings that in the other direction, but still, the county has 100,000 more Democrats. Our county candidate got 34% of the vote. In our state, we have 600,000 more Democrats than Republicans, and in the statewide races, the five statewide races, the Democrats lost by an average of 17%. And, if you look at the results closely, you'll see it's not because Democrats were voting for the Republican. It's that Democrats weren't voting.
Right.
And that was, of course, in addition to the firebombing that sort of recalled Dresden for me, that I had to experience going into that election, because the other side was just desperate to get rid of me. We raised more money than any other Democratic House member in the entire country, from 80,000 different contributors. And this was clean money, you know.
Right.
We're not talking about $5,000 or $10,000 lobbyist PAC checks. We're talking about people sending in $35 or $50 or something like that. 80,000 people did that. So we were creating something really big. And the other side couldn't buy me, so they felt they had to destroy me. Politico reported 6 weeks before the election that 20% of all of the special interest outside money that was being spent by lobbyists in the entire country was spent against me.
That right. That's
And I represented roughly 0.25% of the United States, and they were spending 20% of all their money just to get rid of me.
That was of the independent expenditures, right? Yeah,
that's right. After the Citizens United case, they didn't even have to report them.
That's a scary thought in and of itself. We're talking to Congressman Alan Grayson. Your call's next. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I hope people in Portland appreciate how lucky they are to have progressive radio at all. Here in Orlando, we have two talk radio stations, both extremely right-wing. I refer to them as bad and worse. And that's all we got. People have nowhere to turn to get the truth. It's just 24 hours a day of propaganda spewing forth from the Fox Network and the Cox Network. Those are the owners of the two stations locally, Fox and Cox.
I'm not even going to touch it. Too easy. Fox and Cox. It's too easy. I often think that progressive radio, like the AM stations like AM 620, are kind of taking the place of what NPR used to do, which was actually, in a way, kind of at least challenge the official position on things. We're just not seeing that from NPR so much. Public television and public radio is not really doing that anymore. So.
No, I mean, to show you how bad things have gotten here locally, the public, the PBS station locally was just bought by a right-wing church group.
No, it was not.
It was. I'm not kidding. And they went off the air a few weeks ago.
All right. So there's so much I could ask you about, but I want to make sure that you get a moment to talk about this NoCuts.com effort and this petition gathering effort you've got going. So have at it for our listeners.
Well, I understand people's frustration right now because they see negotiations of giving away their Social Security benefits, their Medicare benefits, their Medicaid benefits. And people see a certain sense of helplessness because there seems to be no way for them to express how they feel, that they feel like they're being robbed. And that's what's really happened here. We're not broke. We're being robbed.
Right.
So what we did is we established a website called no-cuts.com. No-cuts.com, and we invited people to come and sign our petition. Our petition says very simply that Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid should not be cut. That's it.
Period.
That's all it says. It says nothing but that, and we're inviting people to come to the website and express their opinion. Do something useful. Do something constructive. We know how you feel. We know that people feel that they're being abandoned by the folks in charge. Nobody's speaking out for the simple common sense solution to this problem, which is, for instance, ending the war, ending the tax cuts for the rich. So the petition simply says, we are against any and every cut to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. Not today, not tomorrow, and not ever. No way, no how. Not on your life, and certainly not on mine. NEVER. Sincerely, the American people.
Right on. I love it. That's exactly the spirit that we need, because this whole conversation is a false choice. And like I said, I hesitate to even get involved with it without somehow kind of validating the terms of the debate, which to me are totally false. Let's go to Mark in Washington. Mark, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on the air with Alan Grayson. What's up?
Alan, I'd just like to say you're a hero of mine, but a local representative there over there in Oregon, Peter DeFazio, is also a hero of mine. And luckily for him, he was able to re-win his seat, although he was outspent like 5-1 because he had seniority and his constituents realized his value to them. But I was wondering what we can do to get progressives that have that kind of authority. And another thing, how can we get a bigger say in the media? Is it only money that can do that? And again, thank you for your service, and I'll do what I can to get you reelected.
So while we're on that subject, go to congressmanwithguts.com. congressmanwithguts.com. Thanks for the call, Mark. And give money. There is a way that we can get progressives, truly progressive people, into the Congress and into the Senate, and that's by giving them money. Congressmanwithguts.com, and go sign the petition at no-cuts.com. Is there a goal for the petition? I mean, are you trying to get a certain number?
Yes, I've told people that if we reach 100,000 signatures, I will take it to the White House personally. And, you know, being a former congressman, it'll actually let me in.
I wanted to ask you, why did you decide? I mean, it had to have been tough. So why did you decide to run again, and what is your strategy to win this seat back in 2012?
Well, the deciding factor, actually, was a woman who called me from the hospital a few weeks ago. And her name is Charlena. She told me that her husband was in the hospital. The bills were thousands of dollars every day. They literally didn't know if they were better off if he were alive or dead. He was a veteran, but the Veterans Administration wasn't covering his hospital bills. He had had hepatitis when he was 30, so that he wasn't
30,
right, so that he couldn't get health insurance basically for the rest of his life, and he was 56 when she called. And she was very upset that there seemed to be no way to get the treatment that he had because he was suffering from multiple organ failure.
Oh, my God.
And at the age of 56, which is not much older than me. And I said, well, I feel really bad to hear that. I'm not in Congress anymore. What do you think I can do? And she said, you can run again.
Wow.
She said that she wanted, and her husband wanted me to run again because nobody ever cared about people like them except for me.
Wow. Well,
and he died at the end of last month. He passed away. I wasn't able to announce before he passed away. I talked to her twice this week. She told me she would try to let him know through prayer that I was running again.
I hope he knows. Somehow I would like to think that he does know. We are really glad that you're running, Congressman Alan Grayson, congressmanwithguts.com. After that story, I want you to go put money in his coffers now. We're going to go to calls.
Well, let me say a word about the previous caller,
yes.
If I may.
Oh, right. I didn't give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just want to let people know a little bit about DeFazio, something they may not know themselves, and I don't know how much attention this got during the race. He, like I, was firebombed by the special interest sewer money that came out of nowhere at every Democrat in any sort of competitive district. I got more than anybody else by a wide margin. He got a lot of it, too.
Yeah.
And Peter had the guts to try to figure out who was doing this to him and try to let people know. There was an organization called 60 Plus, which pretended to be like AARP, except for the fact that they're owned and funded by lobbyists. So he didn't know who these people were, but they were running thousands and thousands of dollars worth of negative ads against him in his own district. He got an address off an FEC filing,
right.
And he went to their door and knocked on the door.
Right.
And so you've heard this. You know this story already. Someone inside said there's nobody here. And it turned out that the man who said there's nobody here was actually a health insurance company lobbyist.
Oh, my goodness. There's nobody here. That's a panic response.
Yes.
In fact, there is nobody there. There's just lots of money and lots of agenda that has nothing to do with the interests of the American people. I appreciate you responding to that. Let's go to Dean and Aloha. Dean, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're on the line with Congressman Alan Grayson.
Thank you so much. I'm a fan of both of yours.
Well, thank you.
And love your show and love your votes, Congressman. I so appreciate what you have said. I've already given money twice this year to your campaign, so I'm trying to help. I've also given money to Peter DeFazio. And I will give money to Bernie Sanders and various others who show the proper approach to things. I have written several notes to the DSCC and the DNC that I will not give money to them anymore until I see a change of heart and a change of approach.
Uh-oh. Well, that really is a legitimate concern on people's parts. The DCCC money that was given last cycle was largely wasted. If you look at the races where they spent $1 million or more, they lost almost 90% of them.
Well, the Democrats cut you out of the funding loop.
I got nothing.
Is that true? I didn't know
that.
Absolutely.
And in fact, the only member, the Progressive Caucus is about half of the remaining representatives now in the House who are Democrats. There is only one member of the Progressive Caucus who got a penny from the DCCC in the last cycle, and that was Phil Hare, who was a great congressman, but still, you know, only Phil out of all the people who needed that money. So what they do is they take our money, the money given by people with a conscience. You know, the real backbone of the Democratic Party, the people who actually care. And they take our money, and they often use that money in order to pay for Blue Dog advertising in districts that turn out in the end to be unwinnable. In one case, one of the members who lost, Bobby Bright in Alabama, running ads in which he was saying that he never voted with Nancy Pelosi and he always voted with John Boehner. This is a Democrat who was taking Democratic money in order to basically claim that he wasn't a Democrat.
That's just outrageous.
Yeah, and as the previous caller pointed out, we need a little bit more discipline in the party. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can learn something from the Tea Party's tactics. All the Republicans run scared of them now, and both in the House and in the Senate. I mean, if you reach the point where it actually looks like someone like Senator Hatch is considered to be too liberal to run and win a Republican Party primary and may not even make the ballot.
Orrin Hatch.
Too liberal. It shows you how effective the Tea Party is in exercising discipline within their own ranks.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I feel like the void where there was a lack of a progressive response to really organize against the Bush administration is where the Tea Party kind of came in the vacuum where we didn't really organize, I think, as well as we could have or should have. Let me ask you, what do you think about that strategy of not giving money to organizations like the DSCC and the DCCC until they kind of change their agenda? Do you think that's a valid approach?
Well, people now, because of the internet, because of cable TV, because of the saturation of media in our everyday lives, can actually form opinions about individual candidates, and not only the ones in their area, but also the ones outside their area. In our case, many of the people who were among the 80,000 who came to congressmanwithguts.com and made a contribution in the last cycle, many of those people were not in Florida. So it turns out that now people have the information they need to determine which candidates they really feel some kind of kinship with, and the funneling that the DCCC used to do is really not necessary. People can make up their own minds.
You'd think that your example, I mean, rather than the Democratic Party turning on you, you'd think that your example of the way that you enliven Democratic Party voters and members and the whole kind of liberal establishment, that they would get it, that when they stand on principle and they speak the truth, that what happens is money and energy and enthusiasm flows from that. I don't know why they don't get that. Maybe they don't want to get it, Congressman.
And victory also. I mean, as you said at the beginning of the show, I am the only Democrat Democrat to represent downtown Orlando in the past 36 years. We managed to lose 17 elections in a row. The last time a Democrat represented downtown Orlando was during Watergate. And the reason why we were able to win in 2008 is because of what I said, because I was a straight shooter. People saw that. They saw that I was telling it like it is. They saw that I was giving voters a real choice. I didn't pretend to be a Republican, because given the choice between a fake Republican and a real Republican, the voters will always choose the real Republican. So the reason why I won in 2008 is because of that, because I told it like it is. The reason why I lost in 2010 is because it was the worst year for Democrats in 108 years, and because I got trashed, absolutely firebombed by special interest sewer money.
Yeah, it was a bit of a perfect storm. You were targeted. It was a terrible year for Democrats. We had Citizens United, all sorts of things. So we want to support Alan Grayson, Congressman with guts.com. One last question and about redistricting. You really don't have a challenger yet. How do you think redistricting is going to affect your race?
Well, we'll see. I mean, what it looks like is that we're going to see for the first time ever a district that actually leans Democratic in Orlando. We've got, as I indicated before, 100,000 more Democrats in our county, Orange County, than we do Republicans. And in order to prevent Democrats from getting in, previously the Republicans set up five different districts that run off in all sorts of different directions and try to sweep up all the Republicans they possibly can. In my case, my district runs 140 miles northwest of Orlando into horse country in order to put in enough Republicans to give the district to Republicans on a reliable basis. But here now in Florida, we passed constitutional amendments called Fair Districts Florida that will end the gerrymandering by law. Now, you know, we'll see if the Republicans have any respect for the Constitution when it works against them.
Yeah.
That's something that's an open question. But
yes,
it's now
always
a matter of constitutional law in Florida to end the gerrymandering. And if we have fair districts, then I think what we'll see is that Democrats will actually have a fair shot. And that's another reason why I'm more hopeful about this year than about next year than I was about last year. I think that if it's a fair district, people will understand that a Democratic district deserves a Democratic congressman.
We are talking with Congressman Alan Grayson, former congressman and soon to be again congressman from the 8th District of Florida, which is basically the Orlando area. We are taking your calls in this segment. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Can I say one more thing about Portland before we go to the call?
We love it when people love Portland. You wish you were here today, because this is one of the great Portland days, and we got about six of them.
Well, when you travel around the country, and I've been to every state, you quickly realize that some places people feel free to express themselves, and other places people don't. Mm. There's much more of a degree of conformity in some places than in others.
Yes.
When my wife and I went to Portland, we wanted to rent a car so we could get out of the city and go and enjoy the countryside, which we did.
Right.
And in the van, on the way to the rental car place, the rental car location, the driver was dressed like a cat. Which will come as no surprise to you, but it came as a surprise to us. So I went over to her, and I said to her, what's your name? And she looked at me, and she said, Kat. My name's Kat.
I was afraid she was going to say that, but I kind of stuck on you. That's Portland.
Yes.
When we say keep Portland weird, we actually mean it. when you come to Portland next time, I hope you'll stop by the show. We got some calls here. Let's go to calls. Mike in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You are on with Congressman Alan Grayson.
Thanks so much, Adam, and thank you, Alan. It's a great honor to talk to you. I really appreciate your service.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And my question to you, this somewhat dovetails on some of the earlier questions about not giving to the DNC and the DSCC. That one kind of pains me because my senator's in charge of that gig right now, Patty Murray. She's pretty good, but institutionally, they left Russ Feingold. They pretty much left him for dead the way they did with you. And so now we're kind of rebuilding, especially in the House, where we're a minority. But even in the last session, where we had nominal majorities, but we did not have a working majority, because unlike the Republicans who are just so good at closing ranks, we just seem unable to do that with the Democrats. And part of that is this big tent we're always bragging about. And it occurred to me, even in 2006, as we took back both chambers, that you know, all we talked about was majorities. You know, we talked about quantity. How do we rebuild those majorities and get quality at the same time?
Thanks for the call, Mike.
On that?
Thanks for the call, Mike. We are short on time. Congressman, you want to take that? We got about 2 minutes left in the segment. We are flying.
We need both more and better Democrats, but Karl Rove has to some extent taken care of that problem for us by knocking off 28 out of the 54 Blue Dog members in Congress. The caucus barely exists anymore. So what's going to happen is that over time people are going to see that the only winning strategy for a Democrat is to be a Democrat and to be a proud Democrat.
Absolutely. And for me, that means standing on principle. We have a hard break coming up. Julie in Vancouver, you're on with Congressman Grayson. What's up?
Hi, Congressman Grayson. I hope you get reelected and I will be supporting you. I have a question. Clinton said this week that the money has really already been spent by the Congress. If Obama can't get a deal by the end of the week, what would you think about Obama raising it due to the national financial emergency and just raising it on his own and let the courts fight it out?
Great question. Congressman, got about 45 seconds.
Well, the 14th Amendment, as people have pointed out, does seem to call into question the constitutionality of the debt limit entirely.
Right.
Unfortunately, rather than playing that card, Geithner, on behalf of Obama, has been actually undermining the argument, and that's too bad, because we do need that option in the end, as opposed to the option of defaulting on the debt, or as opposed to the option of not sending out the Social Security checks on the day after this deadline is due. They go out the day after August 2nd. So, I think we need to keep that option available. It shouldn't come to that. The Republicans should not be able to hold a gun to the head of America, which is where we are right now.
Alan Grayson, congressman with guts.com, no-cuts.com. Thank you for being on Mad as Hell in America.